Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, September 11th, 2012, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-hosts Lavendar and Anastasia. We're honored to welcome back our distinguished and very well-known guest, Dr. Meg Blackburn-Losey, best-selling author of The Children of Now and several books about the crystalline and starseed children. Her most recent books are The Secret History of Consciousness and Touching the Light. She is a duly ordained minister in both spiritual science and metaphysics, holds a PhD in holistic life coaching, I'll get it out, don't worry, and a doctoral degree in metaphysics. She's also served as a consultant to Good Morning America and 2020. She's been a regular columnist for Kinetics Magazine, owned by our dear friend Catherine Peters Brinkley. Dr. Meg has led groups of people on spiritual quests to sacred sites around the globe, is a master healer, keynote speaker, teacher, and intuitive. Her website is www.spiritlight.com, and that is spelled SPIRITLITE.com. And she has a very popular radio show on awakeningzone.com called Cosmic Particles with Dr. Meg, which airs on Wednesdays at 8:30 Central Time p.m. At the top of the show, we'll have our Starseed News segment with Anastasia, bringing current events of interest to Starseed and sharing some emails sent to us from around the globe. After the news, we'll introduce Dr. Meg, and we'll be asking all of you to join us in sending the Emerald Ray to the families whose lives were touched by the September 11th tragedy. We want to thank Chris for hosting the switchboard this evening, and we invite you to call in with questions or comments tonight, and that number is 917-889-8292. And remember to press 1 on your keypad so we know you want to come on the air. If you like our show, we encourage you to click follow on our show page. You'll get our show notices, and it will help promote our show and guests. And then remember to tell a few friends about us. And we're happy to tell you that as of this week, the total number of listens on our show has gone over 200,000. So for our new listeners, our main site is starseedhotline.com, where we have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our vault of knowledge. The entire site is coded for Starseed activation, and we also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. We'd also like to thank Rose, Anastasia, and Sahar for their continuing great work and dedication on behalf of our Starseed forum. You can also find us on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go. And we'll get started in just a moment, but first I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. Our Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone session available with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. And if you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by getting your solar return timing. And please allow 2 weeks ahead of time to make sure you get it in time. And now I'd like to introduce my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. Good evening, ladies.
Hello, Lavendar here. I'm really excited to have our friend Dr. Meg back on, but I'm anxious to hear what Anastasia has to say tonight because I know she's got some hot news for us. So take it away, Anastasia.
Hi, thank you, Lavendar.
Hi.
Hello, Arielle. Good evening, everyone. So nice to be with you. That
introduction went pretty fast. I was still compiling my news notes. So.
Well, you,
yeah, there's so much to talk about.
There is a lot to talk about this week. So
there really is, and we're going to get started here. Were you going to say something, Ariel?
Well, yeah, I was just going to mention that when you're done with the news, then just before, after we introduce Dr. Meg, that's when we're going to do the Emerald Ray. So I just wanted everybody to know what the schedule is going to be.
Okay, great. All righty. Well, I want to start by, as usual, thanking all of the beautiful Starseed that sent me emails and contributed to tonight's newscast. We got some interesting articles from our Starseed listeners, but I want to start out by saying a special hello to Margaret out there and Cliff that I just spoke with today. Amazing, amazing person, wonderful light worker, very old soul. And to Ted, and to send Ted much love and healing. Thank you, Ted. And we have an article from Ted tonight to share on the radio with everybody. I also want to thank Joseph. Joseph sent a video of that huge coronal solar eruption that actually resulted in an electromagnetic storm that electrified the ground in Sweden and in Norway up north. And after that, we will note that there were numerous earthquakes within a matter of days that rocked around the globe after that. So that was it amazed scientists. It was just absolutely phenomenal. And Joseph sent me the video on that. And so thank you, Joseph. I also want to say hi to Susan and to Debbie and Michaela and to Audrey and Katarina. And Katarina wrote to me and reported that she'd been having more UFO sightings. And it was a rather long email, but I just want to share a couple of sentences. She said that she was very fortunate to be able to house and pet sit again this weekend in Malibu. This is where she's had these sightings. And she saw so much incredible activity in the sky. She said that she saw at least 20 different ships.
Wow.
So that's pretty awesome. And all of you there in Southern California, please be sure to send me any sightings. And if you live in the Malibu area and you saw anything in the last 10 days, I'd like to hear from you. That would be interesting to cross-reference that with Katarina's sightings. Okay. And I want to thank Danielle, who sent photos of orbs, and all of you who just contributed so much and are giving me a wonderful scrapbook of photos and your experiences and sending your love and sharing your light. You're such special, beautiful people, and I so enjoy every chance I get to interact with all of you. Thank you so much. Well, I want to talk for just a moment. I'm going to get the sort of difficult thing out of the way first. Joseph sent me an email about dolphins in the country of Denmark, and I had never heard about this. And I was amazed and alarmed and distressed. And this is an email that he sent reporting that in Denmark, that they are actually killing dolphins as a ceremonial, sort of a rite of passage ceremony for teenagers to achieve adulthood. And they are saying now that the ocean is, and they showed pictures, it was dreadful, that the water is red with the blood of these dolphins.
Oh, wow.
And these, I know, it's just awful, but I had to share this because there is a worldwide movement to put a stop to this. And so those of you that are interested, I'm sure you can Google that. These are the Calderon dolphins. They're just slaying hundreds of them. And I really think that we ought to be aware there is just a worldwide call to put a stop to this. So those of you that are motivated, you can Google that and join in the effort to put an end to that really dreadful practice. I'd never heard of it before. I was astonished. So for as much as we gain in our enlightenment in some ways, we are sometimes devolving. And this is something that I think that our Starseed will want to know about and at least at the very least send light and energy and hopefully get active in some way. There are many causes in this world that we can be active in and that we should be, but this is something that everyone needs to know about. And we'll just move on from there. Let's see now. We also have an email that came to Lavendar, and she asked me to share it, and I'm going to read a little bit from it. This is from Glenn, and I think that Glenn lives in South Africa, or just a moment, hold on a second. Gosh, I don't know. Maybe Lavendar remembers, and maybe she doesn't because she gets so many emails. But I want to share this. He said, I connected with your show on Blog Talk Radio after listening to an interview you had with Dr. Meg Blackburn quite some time ago. And this led me to the Starseed Hotline website that I've pored over and greatly enjoyed the articles and information that you have. I recently purchased your two e-books, 50 Questions About the Crystals, and really enjoyed reading that information. I'm a subscriber to the radio show, and I listen to recordings as soon as I can through iTunes due to the time difference. And over the last several months, I've tried to listen to as many of the past shows as I can, in particular the shows like Crack Between the Worlds and, more recently, the Pleiadian lineup recordings. To say the least, I just love the show and what you, Anastasia, and Ariel share with us all. You have brought the world, you have brought to the world and to us an amazing, wondrous collection of beings and souls so committed to awakening all of us. I'm awed by the journey and the information you have held and shared with us. You have taught me just how little we humans really do know, and yet we are on the brink of something so big if we just choose to open our hearts and minds. And that's a beautiful letter. Thank you so much, Glenn, for sharing that. And
that,
for your,
that is beautiful. I believe he's from South Africa.
Okay. All right. I thought so. Thank you for validating that. But isn't that wonderful?
I looked it up.
And, you know, we all get emails like that all the time where people are just embracing us because they love to know that they're not alone and they're just thriving and gobbling up this connection and the information and knowing that they have a place to belong and that there's a reason why they are the way they are and that there's a higher purpose at hand. So to all of our new listeners, I want to encourage you to please read Crack Between the Worlds, some of our older shows that if you're new to this, you need to be familiar with it. So anyway, thank you very much, Glenn. Well, now, have we had some action in the weather? We had a tornado in Brooklyn, New York. It came in off the ocean and actually damaged some condos on the beach. Now,
that's on you. That you don't hear about that.
That's just, I don't know that. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a professional weatherman, but I think that is extremely rare. In fact, they validated that in the news.
Yeah.
They were blown away. So we've had a lot of earthquakes, too, across the planet, even since last week, since our last gathering. China and Russia, Indonesia, some swarms of earthquakes in California around Beverly Hills and in the central part of the state. There's been a lot of earthquakes in Costa Rica, and that one in Costa Rica, I think tangentially may be connected to that large electromagnetic storm that caused the current to run into the earth up north. That's when it really all started. All of these swarms of earthquakes followed that big solar eruption. And now they have had very severe weather in Australia and New Zealand, and we want to send light and love and all the help that we can energetically to our starseed in those countries. And I think that by now it is probably abating, but they have had a really tough time. And there's even more. I mean, we could talk about weather and that sort of thing all night long. It's just happening everywhere. So we want to be sure to just radiate that light and help stabilize the planet energetically because there's a lot going on in the way of shifts and changes. So I want to talk about, for a moment, the email that I got from wonderful Ted. Ted is a delight. Ted is just a joy. And he is always sending me good things. And he sent me an article from Science Magazine that was titled Search for Alien Life Gets a Boost from Twin Stars. And a man named Jerome Oros, I hope I pronounced that right, who is an astronomer at San Diego State University, has talked about a discovery that NASA has found. They've been looking for twin stars that can host multiple planets. They've been doing that for some time. And as they're looking, they're finding. They are finding more and more planets and more situations that can support life. I mean, it's an amazing thing. It's no longer needs to be a question. Now, I know our starseed listeners know this already, but nevertheless, we need to know that mainstream science is being blown away by discoveries that are occurring at an accelerated rate that are showing that the universe is absolutely a seedbed, a hotbed of potential life. Now, the newly discovered twin planets that we're talking about were discovered around Kepler 4-7, and that is a sun-sized orb that is paired with another star about a third as big. And they really think that that could very easily host life, along with many other findings that they're having, what they're calling exoplanets in existence that look like they would be life-supportive. They say that the fact that you can find planets in the habitable zones of binary stars means that you have a lot more real estate for potential life. So it's really not a question of is there, it's a question of where. And where is a big word when we're looking at something as large as the universe. So there's no question. There's life everywhere around us. Well, now this is just fascinating, you all. We are on the 14th of September, which is a couple days away, 3 days away. We are going to have two near asteroids fly by the planet, very near asteroids. One of them has been deemed to be a potentially hazardous asteroid on the same day. One of them is asteroid 2012 QC8, and it is going to pass by us at about 22.7 lunar distances. Now, that may seem like a lot, but when you talk about, you know, the size of our solar system, that's really a pretty close call. The lunar distance is the distance between the Earth and the Sun. That's coming by on the 14th of September, and then there's another one on the same day, and that's asteroid 2012 QG42. Now, this one should make us sit up and pay attention. It's going to pass through at a lunar distance of 7.43, and that one, they say, is a potentially hazardous asteroid. Now, I need you to know that a lot of these asteroids are being discovered just days before they're coming into our orbit or within range. These are not asteroids that are being found far in advance. A lot of these are being discovered really, really close to their approach, which indicates to me that there may certainly be a lot of activity asteroid and space-wise with incoming objects that, again, I've said before, may be connected to the approach that we're having with the Sagittarius galaxy, the merging of that with our own, and other things going on in the cosmos. And there's a lot happening in our own solar system that indicates that there's a destabilization of the solar system. One could wonder about that. Let's put it that way. I'm not an astronomer, and I can't say that it indicates it, but certainly it raises questions. There's been an explosion on Jupiter, and they said that something hit the planet in the early hours of September 10th, igniting a ferocious fireball in the giant planet's cloud tops. Now, what they think this was, that it was probably hit by an asteroid or an incoming comet. And so you see our entire solar system is having a lot of flybys of airborne objects. So they're monitoring that for signs of debris and any other things connected to the crater that might indicate exactly what it was. All they really know for sure is that it was an enormous explosion. And in the meantime, in our solar system, we're looking at climate change on Mars. Scientists from NASA are saying that Mars has warmed by about a half a centigrade since the 1970s, and they say this is similar to the warming experienced on Earth over approximately the same period. So whatever is occurring on our planet, maybe we need to step back and consider that this is also happening on a solar system or even a galactic scale. So
wow.
The whole solar system appears to be going through lots of stuff, including our sun. Okay. So anyway, let's see here. I've got some other things I want to share with you that are very important. We have, I should have probably brought this up with the weather, but there is a volcano that's preparing to erupt in Central America, and this is in Guatemala. In fact, it actually is erupting, and it's shooting lava and columns of ash into the air, and it's putting a halt to flights in the area. It's near the tourist city of Antigua in Guatemala, And it's considered to be one of Central America's most active volcanoes. But it's rocking and rolling right now. There was a shockwave, the shockwave from the 7.6 magnitude earthquake that struck Costa Rica, they feel probably invigorated the volcano as well. Incidentally, and actually it's not incidental, it's quite tangential, the Costa Rican earthquake that I just spoke about, the 7.6 magnitude, actually sent shockwaves up through the entire landmass of North America. And there is actually a little video on the internet that shows all the way from Costa Rica up through the United States, up through Canada north, the entire ground from coast to coast rippled like ripples in a pond. And on that day, on September 5th, underneath our feet, actually the earth was rising and falling. So that is a pretty amazing thing. Entirely, the entire northern hemisphere was actually reverberating from that quake, even though we could not feel it.
Wow.
And we also have an increasing number of seismically tense and volcanic hot spots in the Caribbean. We're having a lot of seismic activity out there. And there's also an increase in the noctilucent clouds. Now, noctilucent clouds, if you've never seen them, and I have seen them once, is an amazing phenomenon. They appear just about dusk, and they shine electric blue, and actually in some places they glow after dark. They can be seen at night. And what they're attributing this to now, it's been kind of a mystery. Some people say it's magnetic storms, geomagnetic storms, solar flares, etc. Now they're beginning to think that this is from meteor smoke, that passing meteors are filling up the smoke from these meteors is filling up the Earth's atmosphere, and that the noctilucent clouds are refracting light from meteor smoke. And as many fireballs as we've had in the sky and as much as is going on out there, I just thought that was very interesting. That they are attributing this to probably a meteoric phenomenon. So that is,
A lot of activity.
And I wanted to talk to you. Let's see, I just want to make sure I have all of the... Oh, no, I have to tell you about this. We're not done with talking about Earth phenomenon. There has been something happening in West Seattle. And our Starseed listeners out there, I'd love to hear from you if you've heard this. This has been reported on local news stations. They have been hearing a strange hum that's keeping people in West Seattle awake. And these are just common people, everyday people, that I've researched this, and I was wishing that I had a way to play this for you on the radio tonight, but I couldn't figure out how to get the sound file through my microphone that it would sound good. So I'm just going to tell you about it, but really raise a hair on the back of your neck if you could hear it. People are reporting that this sound gets higher and lower, goes away and comes back. It's creeping them out. Some people say it sounds like machinery. A high-pitched hum. People have wanted to know and demanded what it is. Officials have said they don't know what it is. And then, interestingly, about, maybe 24 to 48 hours later, somebody drummed up an explanation. And I guess I shouldn't sound so jaded about saying that they drummed it up, but they had attributed it to the sound of fish in a lake, a particular kind of fish that makes a mating sound under the water. They said that was probably magnifying and going into the atmosphere. Seems highly unlikely to me that would be the case.
Never heard a noisy fish before.
Well, the fish are noisy. They dropped a microphone into the lake, claiming that was a similar sound to the fish. But it really is highly unlikely that this is resonating in the high atmosphere, that people everywhere far away from the lake are hearing it. Whatever. Anyway, I think that it is very similar to the sky sounds that are being reported around the world. So any of you in the Seattle area that have heard about this, I would love to hear from you and to know what's going on with that. So anyway... we have got one more story, and I just need to back up here for a second. It's about quantum teleportation. Well, beam me up, Scotty, because this is something that they're actually working on. Can you believe that? The technology is escalating at a phenomenal rate. Now, they're not teleporting people, of course, but what they're teleporting is particles, light particles and photons. And they've managed to teleport these light particles between the Canary Islands and Tenerife. So they are now beginning to dematerialize things and materialize them into other locations. So, you know, everybody, when we talk about the wonderful and amazing and incredible technologies that that we're capable of doing in a spiritual way, with spiritual reality, spiritual technology. And when people sort of wag their fingers at you or give you a nod like, oh, that's just not possible, just remember that many technologies that we can do spiritually, science is trying to do in a laboratory. But there's just so much evidence all around us of the very reality that we know to be true in our hearts that science is beginning to discover in its slow plodding way to validate that the world is not just three-dimensional, it's not just material, that time doesn't exist, that we exist beyond space, time, and dimension, and that really anything is possible. So that's what I want to leave you with tonight. And I wish all of you to have a beautiful week, and just keep doing your light work and keep staying connected, and let us stand in the love of our hearts and do good for the planet and each other. So thank you for your time tonight.
Well, very well said, Anastasia, and thank you so much for bringing us the Starseed News.
You're welcome.
And, well, we have on the line now, Dr. Meg is with us. So, Lavendar, are you? I know you're there. You've been listening to the news.
I'm here.
Okay. Well, I would just like to introduce to you one of our favorite people, Dr. Meg Blackburn-Losey. Hello, Dr. Meg. You're on the air.
Hey, girls. Thanks for having me back. I always have a great time on your show.
Well, we love having you here. And, you know, before we get started, you maybe didn't hear in the intro, but we would just like to take about a 10-second break and have everyone listening, whether it's right now or from the archives later on in the week, to send the Emerald Ray to the families who were touched and affected by the September 11 tragedy. So I'm just going to ask everyone to focus the Emerald Ray and send it to those people who need it the most. And so be it. Thank you for joining us with that. So, Dr. Meg, what's new? You're on the West Coast, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm in Washington, but I'm in Spokane. I'm across state from where the hum's happening. I haven't heard it here.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering if you were if you were witnessing that.
No, I've been seeing some articles though, and I've been laughing about all those naked fish doing dirty things and keeping everybody up at night.
Yeah, well, yeah, if you can believe that, maybe the fish were talking to the weather balloons.
Yeah, right.
So I'm going to turn this over to you, Lavendar.
Okay, thank you. Well, Dr. Meg, I know that you have lots to tell us about your trip to England, going to see the crop circles, so take it away.
Yeah, you know, it was a great trip. I had a really small group this time because the Olympics were going on, and I think people were steering clear of it. But and we were there a week earlier because the Olympics actually started the day the trip ended. And so there weren't as many as we were in last year. They came the next week after we left. But there was an interesting phenomenon going on this year where they would make a crop circle and then a couple days later add to it, and sometimes even add to it a third time. And that happened in two locations particularly that caught my attention, because those were ones that I didn't feel like humans had helped make them. You can really tell this year there's a lot of sloppy crop circle makers out there, and we skip those because they just don't carry the same kind of energy. But the ones that were being added on to, it was interesting because one of them looked like a city underwater. There were like water drops and like a row of buildings, and excuse me. And then the next thing that happened was a big circle was added around it and a couple of other designs. And then thirdly, there were spires put out to all the cardinal directions from this, from the second part, the circle. And we walked in that, and that had to have been 500 yards, probably. It was huge. I mean, we walked and walked and walked, and it was quite brilliant in its beauty and the energy. There was one spot in particular that you could stand, and it would pretty well take you out of body. I played with the group some, and some got it and some didn't, but that's always the case, you know. The energy in the circles I noticed this year was really sweet. And the area over by near Avebury, where the Stargate has been active, was really quiet. I spent more than half a day over there, and I sat there. The group wanted to go hiking, see a nearby site, and I sat under a tree right across from where the Stargate is, and I just listened and, you know, and told them, well, here I am, kind of thing, and if you want to come and talk to me, because the guys that are showing up there in 3D from the Stargate had actually visited me about 12 or 15 years ago. And when Colin Andrews and I realized that, we were both kind of blown away. And I went over to the area that Colin had showed us and spent a good amount of time, more than once, and it was just rock quiet. I mean quiet, very strangely quiet. So I'm kind of thinking that, not that they've pulled out, but that maybe it's kind of a quiet before a lot of activity starts up. So we'll see what happens. And, you know, there was another thing that we ran into there this summer where some of the farmers, one farmer's son in particular that's kind of inheriting the family farm, has decided to take a one-man war against crop circles, and he's been mowing the centers out of them. And it was really frustrating. There were a couple of times we walked a tremendous way to get into a circle that was kind of way out in the field, because, you know, some of these fields are a mile or bigger, and you can't see it from the road, and so you get out there, and then you realize that somebody's taken the middle out. It's kind of disheartening. But for the most part, that wasn't happening. That just happened in a couple of occasions. But it was a real interesting year. The circles, and what I noticed was that some of the most beautiful and intricate ones came up the week after we left, and there's been a trend of these kind of serpent-looking ones or ones that look like they have pinchers on their head, if they had a head, and they look. People are saying that's specifically referencing a specific Venus event. But there was a really interesting one a couple weeks ago, toward the end of August, that looked like a cube, and that was so perfect. I had to look at that two or three times because there's some smaller areas built into the design. And I can't tell from the picture what they are, and I haven't seen any close-ups of it. So it's been a pretty interesting year, and they seem to have a trend with this one particular kind of design. And I, for the life of me, I haven't figured out what they're trying to say, but they're serious. I mean, they've put this one, some version of this same design down probably five or six times this year.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Were you there for your birthday?
I had the best birthday. Thanks for asking. Of course, you guys know when it is. You did my chart. I stayed in Glastonbury for 5 days after the group left and just kind of hung out, which is the first time I've gotten to really be there without a group, you know. I was staying with friends, and I spent the morning shopping, because Glastonbury just has the coolest stuff. And then I spent the afternoon at the Glastonbury Abbey sitting on a hill just being there, and it was lovely. I had a great time. Then I had a good dinner in a pub on a little river. It was a good day, yeah.
Well, happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about your Bosnia trip, if you can.
Oh, I got a lot to say about that one. Well, as some of you know, and many of you don't, after I was in England, I flew over from London to Sarajevo, to Bosnia, to check out the pyramids that have been discovered there by Sam Osmagovic. And Sam and his wife Sabina have become friends of mine and had invited me over. And so I flew over there and got to spend 8 days exploring the Bosnian Valley of the Pyramids, and I spent a lot of time in the tunnels and climbed to the top of the Sun Pyramid and went up on the Moon Pyramid and the Stone Temple, where there's a very cool impression of a foot in the stone. You know, you read about these, but there is actually one sitting there in front of God and everybody. And I'm still looking at my pictures because I swear that footprint has only two toes, and they're pointed, and it's kind of strange. It's on Facebook. If you haven't gone to my Facebook, I put all the pictures up. First of all, I want to say that what they have over there is the real thing. I want to say that it's bigger and older than any site of pyramids that we have ever discovered previously. The Pyramid of the Sun and the Moon there are both larger than the Great Pyramid of Cheops in Giza. And the energies that are happening over there, it was chilly in Glastonbury, okay? I was wearing a sweatshirt. And then I went to London and grabbed a plane. And I got off the plane in Sarajevo, and it was over 100 degrees. Turns out nobody where I was had any air conditioning, and it was brutal. And so I wasn't feeling great. You know, it was a shock. And then I got up on the Sun Pyramid the first afternoon, and Sam says, here, go sit on this rock. We call it the healing rock because it's people feel really good after they sit there a while. And it was it's up near one of the where they're digging, they're excavating. And so he went off to check some other sites, and I stayed on this rock. And I felt like $1 million. I got up. I practically ran down the pyramid. I hardly slept that night. Didn't need much to eat. The next day, I could hardly sit still. And, I mean, this is, you don't understand, this princess needs her air conditioning, okay? So it was a challenge for me. But the energy there, and I have to tell you, I've been home, a month now, and I still feel like $1 million. I don't know what happened to me there, but I have all kinds of new things that I can connect with and do, and I'm losing weight. I feel great, and it just hasn't stopped. The tunnels there's a whole tunnel network under the whole pyramid site, really, and they've only excavated about 800 meters, which is about 2,400 yards, about a mile and a half, not quite a mile and a half. And I was so lucky to be able to just kind of have carte blanche in the tunnels, and I had a guide to take me everywhere so I wouldn't get lost, because you can. And inside of there is absolutely no cosmic radiation, which is, like, huge. There is a constant emission of ultrasound going on in there and on the big pyramid. The negative ions inside the tunnels are anywhere from 43 to 200 times greater than normal. Now, negative ions are very healing. And when you go spend any time in the tunnels, you feel, besides the fact that it's very cool in there, you just feel great. And they've discovered in there some huge megalithic-sized, they look like stones, but samples were taken from a couple of scientists, and I can't remember, I think in Italy, but I won't swear to it. And they found that this big one that they had sampled is actually ceramic. Now, this level of the tunnels, where they've tested the you know, the geological layers of the walls. There was a piece of wood lodged in there, and they were able to carbon date it at, get this, 32,500 years ago.
Oh,
and that's
God.
The level that these big megaliths are sitting on. So the tunnels are anywhere from 32,500 years and sooner. And there were events 5,000 years ago where the tunnels, somebody filled the tunnels in. And it's bizarre because what they're filled in with is all this like powdery, fluffy dirt. And then they built walls at the bottom, like to catch if it started to fall out. But, you know, when you look at it, it looks like it had to have been blown in or something. Nobody did that by shovels. It was too soft. And it was really strange. But there are so many strange things there. There's a big rock just inside the entrance, and it's written in with rune writing, which is a lot. The Vikings used to use runes, and... you know, that from that era. And basically the translation that they have, and I'm going to paraphrase it, I may not have it exact, but this is pretty close. The gate is closed. We must continue to defend and conquer until which time the Stargate is open again.
Whoa.
Holy moly.
Yeah, you want your hair to stand up?
Yeah.
There are pictures of that also on my Facebook page. An interesting thing, a few years ago, they had some volunteers helping. In fact, the whole thing is being excavated by volunteers that come for 2 weeks at a time in the summer. And somebody decided to move that rock, and that night the tunnel flooded. So they put the rock back, and the flooding stopped.
Where did the water come from?
There are underground lakes in there. There's underground streams in there. I don't know exactly what happened, but it was very strange. And Sam said from then on, he decided they're not moving anything. So whatever they find, wherever they find it, that's where it sits. Because he doesn't want to disturb the energy field. He's smart that way. And it's just there's a scientist there. He's an engineer, and he's been studying the energy in the tunnels, and he's developed this software that can, like, read your whole body. And I don't know what it's called because he spoke Bosnian and I didn't, and I had a translator. And there were a few things we couldn't translate. But he's studied this, and he's actually made these little discs that replicate the energy in the tunnels. And I brought a couple home, and... whatever's going on, I feel great, you know, like I said. But anyway, he hooked me up to this machine, and he read every system in my body, and he went over, and then he says, "Now, go sit in the tunnel for an hour." I said, "You don't have to ask me twice. It's cold in there." And so I went in, and I sat by that the biggest ceramic piece they found so far. It has an egg-shaped anomaly inside that Sam believes is quartz, and it's right over where the underground water forks. And how the water comes in and forks, the ceramic has broken exactly the same way. It's bizarre. So I went and sat there for an hour, and then this guy hooked me up to the machine again, and then he compared the before and after in the tunnel. I cannot tell you how much the harmonics in my body had changed, all for, you know, the better. After spending an hour in the tunnel, it was just mind-blowing the things that are happening there. And what's really neat, if I'm rambling, just throw your questions in any time. I'm just still excited about this. Okay. The Sun Pyramid, the technologies here are older than anything we've seen. You know, the other pyramids that you can go to at Teotihuacan and Giza and some of the other places, they're pretty much made of cut stone. Well, the big pyramid in Bosnia is covered with a four-layer system. The outside layer is 6 to 8 inches thick of concrete that was poured in increments, big slabs, every so many feet. I mean, these slabs are bigger than we are. You know, they're huge. And they're thick. And then under that is cut stone. Under that is a layer of clay. And under that is a layer of limestone that's also been cut. So, and they've found this on every side of the pyramid. I mean, they everywhere they look, it's the same system. The entire thing is covered in this building, the way that, you know, it's all built the same. And the rocks that are in there are huge. There's an area where, after World War II, the gypsies had inherited that area for a while, and they were cutting up these big pieces of concrete to carryable sizes and building their houses out of them. So there's an area where you can see underneath how big the rocks are. They're mind-blowingly huge, just huge.
And do they have any suspicions, at least, on how this feat was accomplished?
They're just staying open right now, which is smart. They've hardly scratched the surface. You know, it's not like when we go to Egypt or we go to Teotihuacan and we drive up, oh, there's the pyramids. These are still covered in trees and bushes and you know, natural flora and stuff. And they've only excavated small areas, so they don't really have any great conclusions yet, except that they're older and bigger and a totally different technology than any other pyramid site. They don't really have specific ideas, but what's really interesting is the pyramid is throwing off a beacon of light from its top point, you know, from the apex. And it's about 13 feet wide, and it's a steady 28 megahertz. And they've actually recorded bits of voices in this shaft of light. And it's what's really neat is they have not been able to they haven't been able to figure out what they're saying yet. And I told him what they need to do is to wrap their sound recording into a spiral and it'll put it all together. We'll see if he figures that one out. But
that's right. Yeah.
The thing is, though, the energy coming off the top of this pyramid is what they call non-Hertzian. Hertzian energy is like our electricity. The farther it gets away from the source, the weaker it gets. What the pyramid is putting out is completely the opposite. The farther the energy gets away from the pyramid, the stronger it gets. So it's sending out something intergalactically even today.
Wow.
Yep.
Who's in charge of the excavation? I mean, is it government sponsored, or did private industry come in and take it over? Who's in charge?
We're talking Bosnia here. It's very, very poor and very backward, and they have a lot of crooked politicians, and Sam has done most of this excavation with his own funds and volunteers, and just recently a little bit of government help has come. Interestingly, their Department of Defense watches the site very carefully and, in fact, comes out regularly and checks where the excavations are happening and stuff. And that same guy is actually who took me back to the airport when I left. But they're real low-key. I mean, the whole thing, it needs scientists so badly and proper help and tools and more volunteers. And I mean, this is kind of one man has taken on this Herculean job. And what he's been able to do in a matter of a few years is pretty impressive. But they're, you know, for instance, they're accomplishing huge things, but they're only maybe 50 volunteers at a time, and that sounds like a lot of people. But you talk about a site that's many miles squared, and it's all these different types of sites, the stone temple and the different pyramids and the tunnels, and then they're excavating a site up on top of the Sun Pyramid where there's a medieval fortress built. And then under that, there were Roman walls, which were attached directly to the face of the pyramid. And so there's that site going on, and, you know, there's a lot happening. And so they're spread too thin. And when they're excavating the tunnels, for instance, there are thousands of triangular or diamond-shaped rocks that they're coming out with in wheelbarrows. And nobody seems to know what they're for. I say they're artifacts. but what they're doing is whatever they pull out of the tunnels, they're putting in a trash pile, and nobody's sifting it. And so they're probably throwing away a lot of good archaeological evidence. They haven't found, like, any bones or anything like that, but I found a stone tool in one of the wheelbarrows just sitting there watching them go by, and I set it aside and asked them to show it to them. But, you know, I think they're missing something that they could be having had they had more help. And, you know, Bosnia is very poor. They were under siege in Sarajevo for over 3 years, and terrible things happened there. And the overall sense of the people is that they're not over the war yet, not over being held, you know, captive all that time, and they're very poor still, and they don't really understand the idea of what this place could do for them. You know, they even some of the locals don't believe it's true because they've been, like, living on those mountains for years. Never occurred to them they were sitting on a pyramid, you know. So it's a kind of an interesting quandary there as far as how much can they do with what they have to work with. You know, even their tools are primitive, just like the handles are so old, they're just, you know, they're rough, and the tools aren't sharp anymore, and they're using, like, picks and shovels, literally. And we're talking a pyramid that's half again almost as big as the one in Giza. You're talking a monumental work here.
So what? How many miles does it cover? I mean, what kind of area? You say there's the Pyramid of the Sun, the Moon, and a temple.
Well, they found five pyramids so far, plus the stone temple, plus the Temple of the Mother Earth, which is actually shaped like a, what do you call it, this outdoor theater, what do you call it? An amphitheater. It's shaped, it's curved, and it's man-made. It's huge. It looks like this huge, long, curved mountain. And so there's that and the stone temple, and then so far they found five pyramids, and I have a sense they'll find more, because if you look out across the valley, you know, where you're, even if you didn't know what a pyramid looked like, you can pretty well pick them out. Except the Moon Pyramid, which is a little bit irregular on one side because of erosion.
So are you going to eventually take people over there on tours, you think?
Yeah, the plan is the first week of September next year. I have not got the arrangements made or, you know, so that I can price it yet, but I'm definitely planning to do that. And it's going to end in a conference all about the pyramids there in Visoko or Sarajevo. I'm not sure where he's having it, but, yeah, I've definitely planned that. It'll start like the 1st of September and end the 9th. The 9th will be the conference.
Yeah, wow. That'll be something that I'm sure a lot of our Starseed listeners would certainly be interested in. So as soon as you get those details ready, be sure and come back on our show and tell our listeners about it.
I'd be delighted. Thank you. Yeah, everybody's saying, I want to go. It's you know, it's a lot more primitive than a lot of the places that I take people in, but I feel like the opportunity to be at a site like this in the infancy of its excavation is, like, how often does that happen? Almost never. The ones that we go to and we flock to have been uncovered and excavated and changed, and people have carted things off or sold them, and this place is original, and it's still alive. And that's what I think is as much or more than anything that I encountered there, was the fact that it's a living thing.
And no telling who built it.
I don't think they were from around here.
Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
I really don't.
Did you see any blue rocks? Any blue, cobalt blue looking stones there?
No, I didn't, because they'd have come home in my pocket if I had.
Okay.
I saw nothing of any color in the stones at all. Although I did bring home I don't know, 10 or 20 of the little triangles and diamonds that I picked up from the wheelbarrows.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the energy there is really sweet. It's not like massive and male, and it's not like soft and female like a lot of the mountains and stuff feel. It was just sweet. I can't explain it. Very calm energy, but vital, very vital.
Was it kind of devic? Was it kind of like fairies and elves and that kind of devic energy?
This is like something I've never encountered before, and I'm pretty good about recognizing energies, and I have never encountered this particular thing before. It doesn't really have a sense of a specific identity. It's more like an everything. Does that make sense?
Oh, it's kind of like the all that is, right?
Kind of like that, yeah. It's like you get into that area, and it tunes you right up. I got home, August the 9th. This is, the 11th, so it's over a month. I can't tell you how good I feel, how much energy I've had, how much I've been able to accomplish, you know, just in having the extra wherewithal to, you know, to do everything. It's just, I look up and I say, my God, 2 months ago I couldn't have done that, you know. So it changed me, and I still don't exactly know what all the hells are.
Yeah, great. Do you have any lectures or seminars that people could come to that you have scheduled, that you can announce your schedule to our listeners if people are close to where you're going to be?
Thanks. I'm going to be in Las Vegas, not this weekend, but next weekend coming up, towards the end of the month, that we're going to be doing another virtual lightworkers filming. And anybody that's in the Vegas area, it's there at what's it called? I'll think of it in a minute. It's a hotel by the airport. And I go there, Sandy Sedgbeer interviews me. You know, the little videos that you see on my website, that's where those come from. And she invited me to come do another one, so I'm going to go do that. And then I'm just about done with my going around the stuff for the year, but I am taking registrations now for my 2013 healing, the Touching the Light classes, the certification. And I believe I will be able to offer that online as well. So if you're thinking about it and wishing you could go, but you don't, you know, traveling and all of that's too much, I may have a solution for you. I'll have that sorted out in the next week or so. So that's on touchingthelight.org. All the information is touchingthelight.org. And then Peru in December, and that's pretty much it for my year.
Well, are you full for your trip to Peru? Do you still have places?
Well, actually, I've had a few cancellations the last couple of weeks, so I actually do have room if anybody wants to come. October 15th is the cutoff date. I have to send the money in the next day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I know that Peru trip is going to be awesome, especially.
Yeah.
What are the dates down in Peru?
October 9th through the 22nd, if you go for the whole thing. If you just come to part two, where we're all going to be on Machu Picchu, and we'll start in Cusco and go Cusco and the valley, and then the Urubamba Valley, and then Machu Picchu, the second part's the 14th through the 22nd. So you can either do all of it, come up to Lake Titicaca with me, and do ceremony at the sites up there, and go to the portal of Lord Amamaru, which is the end of a wormhole, believe it or not, that culminates right there near the lake, and then some other sites we're going to go to, and then we'll go on down to Cusco and meet everybody that's coming for part two on the 14th.
Now, you said, is that December you're talking about?
Yeah, December. I have to cut off registrations in October. This is a really big group, and I have a lot of arrangements to make, and, you know, they're helping me with that, and I don't want any mistakes, so I'm cutting it off early so that we make sure we have plenty of time to get everybody situated and their plane tickets to get in and out of where we're going, taken care of, and, you know, all of that. It's a big job, so.
Okay.
It's going to be an amazing trip, though.
Great. Well, what's new in your world as far as tuning into some of the changes that are happening, say, you know, like weather or earth changes and maybe changes you're seeing within your clients? Do you have clients that all seem to have the same kind of physical ailments or seeing any synchronization with some of the changes?
Well, that's a big lot of questions. Okay. Weather-wise, I'm seeing some major changes as I travel around. You know, I earlier this summer, I went to Denver, and it was 107, and there were fires everywhere. I went to, right after that, I flew from Denver to Atlanta. It was 106. And our weather here in Washington has been really strangely mild for the summer and last winter, and I have a feeling it's not going to be that way this winter. I think we're going to get whacked. But yeah, the other thing that I'm concerned about is I don't think that, you guys know me, I'm not into fear or you know, any of that stuff, but I saw the article about the ice melting. Was that in the Arctic? Or Greenland, somewhere up north, this huge, massive melt happened overnight, practically. And what I want to say is that the scientists did not predict this stuff correctly because they think we have all this time, but the truth is that the way that this whole system works, it's an exponential process, not a linear one. And so as these things occur, it's going to kind of expand the potential for more events. So we can look for the waters to rise, the oceans to rise sooner rather than later. And I don't mean tomorrow or next year, but they've miscalculated this, I'm sure of it. And I've been seeing signs. I watch the science news, you know, and I see different things. And then we have idiots saying that fish are humming and keeping people awake, and you know, and then you see, you see all these cover stories, and then you see massive die-offs of birds and fish in one of our Great Lakes last week, and they say, oh, that's been happening forever. We just have a way to get the information faster now. Well, that may be partly true, but the fact that these things happen at all is not okay. And I don't think that the scientists are looking at the bigger picture. They're so busy working their formulas for their specific jobs that I don't think they're putting the whole picture together. So, you know, that concerns me a lot. But, you know, it's just about having sense and don't go build a house on a beach, you know. For the most part, people are going to be just fine, but I think we need to get a little greater sense around ourselves, being human beings and all. We can be kind of ignorant.
Yeah. So, what do you find that your clients are having similar aches and pains, or similar visions or dreams? Are you seeing any synchronization anywhere?
I'm seeing a lot of vivid dreams. I'm having them myself. It's bizarre. But the trend the last week or so has been that a lot of people are getting anxious or fearful that don't normally. And I don't think it's literally as much as an emotional thing as the energies are bizarre right now. And, one minute you feel great, and the next minute it feels like you just got plugged into a socket. And so there's some real intense energy waves coming through. And I'm not sure that people are recognizing it for what it is. I think that maybe sometimes they're thinking it's anxiety or something, because it hits your body really hard, and it starts in the middle of your chest and spreads sometimes. So if you're having that, and it's kind of off and on, or starts, it goes on for a while and then quits, you know, for the rest of the day, those are energy waves, and they are massively intense right now. So, we're starting to see a lot of interesting fluctuations. And I'm also noticing how much easier it is to access totally across the dimensions simultaneously. It used to be like when you went over to the other side, for lack of a better way to describe that, you know, you would get out there and you might experience a dimension at a time or a few dimensions in your awareness. But now when I go out there, when I look out there, it's like everything's simultaneous, and you can see all of the dimensions all at once. And so there's a great deal of harmonization and synchronicity, not synchronization going on clear across creation, you know, and it's not just us. So I kind of have to think that they're probably aware of us too, you know, those beings that we often hear or see or some of us even talk to. I think that the awarenesses are going across the board now, and they're not so compartmentalized.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. It's almost like all the veils have been lifted.
Seriously, yeah. Seriously. I have this new thing that I can do that I kind of get into my space, and I don't know how to explain this, but my whole self reaches up, and all of a sudden, you can't tell the difference between me and everything else. I don't know how to describe it, but my one friend calls it isness. She says, my God.
She likes that.
Yeah. She says, my God, because she can see what I'm doing. She's one of the few people that I know that can see a lot like I do. And she says, my God, you know what you're doing? I said, yeah, I do, but how the hell do I explain this? So, excuse me, I got allergies going on. There's a new way, a new accessibility, shall I say, to connect into the one from an entirely different perspective than we've been doing it. And when I understand it better, you know I'll explain it. I don't have words yet.
Yeah, you will. You will.
Yeah.
Ariel, I'm going to turn it back over to you and Anastasia to ask Dr. Meg some questions, and then maybe we'll open up the telephone lines.
Okay. So before we get to that, I just want to tell everyone that if you have a question or comment for Dr. Meg, you need to press 1 on your keypad so we know that you would like to come on the air and speak with Dr. Meg. Going back to the pyramids in Bosnia, do they have a lot of UFO sightings in that area?
You know, I don't know, and I'm not sure if anybody's keeping track. I had a huge sense of that when I was there, but I didn't see any. But you know, when there's a place is a hot spot, you can often feel that, and I definitely had that sense, but I don't know of anybody firsthand. There is a website that Sam keeps that's really full of stuff, and it's BosnianPyramidOfTheSun.com. That's the official site with a lot of the scientific testing information and data on there, and I think he did have, even those recordings I mentioned were on that site at one time. So if there has been anything, spectacular, he would have it on the site.
Okay, that's BosnianPyramidOfTheSun.com. Com, okay.
Yeah, it's a big one, I know, but
But it's easy to remember.
Yeah.
So, I want to switch the subject here a little bit and ask you to tell us about your book, Touching the Light, what it is, what you are teaching, and what you hope that others can learn from that.
It's so sweet. Yeah, Touching the Light is my current book, and it was a lot of years in the making. Basically, what I did was as I've learned how to work with the energies, I've learned I don't know if the listeners know, but I can actually see this stuff. I'm full sensory when I'm out of body. It's kind of weird. And so I know what the energies look like. I know what they're doing. I know what happens when we change it. And I know what, you know, a lot of times what causes illnesses or problems. And so over time, I started to realize there were patterns, there were trends, that there were some commonalities, and then there are some things that are downright bizarre. And what I did was I put it all into a book that explains, you know, if you want to know anything at all about working with energy, about healing ethereally, about getting into your intuitive nature and intentionally joining the divine. Excuse me, about stepping into someone's, merging with someone's field so that you can work with them from the inside out. Touching the Light can tell you that and a whole lot more. It was a bestseller before the actual release date, and it's well illustrated. There's a hundred and some illustrations in there, and it doesn't only explain everything, it shows you how to do it, how to do a basic healing. And from that, I've now expanded into teaching certification classes. And I have my first two groups this year, and they're doing spectacularly. All of them are working multidimensionally in both groups. I've got one in Spokane and one in Atlanta. And we're meeting 8 times over the course of the year and doing a lot of hands-on, a lot of learn-as-you-go kind of stuff, because I'm a believer that when people experience it, then they really know it. You know, I don't just tell you how to have an experience. I show you how to go there and let you have your own. And so it's going really well. And I had a lot of requests to do it online, and I think I have that figured out. I need to check a couple of things, and if I'm correct, then I'll say I absolutely have it figured out. So that has been exciting, to be able to take people, many of them from scratch, and help them to access multidimensionality. And they're actually feeling things and knowing where to find them and understanding what they mean. And I just sit back in awe of all of them. They've done such a magnificent job this year. So
Are there any prerequisites?
None.
For people?
No. No. In fact, I don't care if you know anything coming into it. I'd rather you didn't. I have some students, you know, that have been through everybody's classes, and I had one that had done all of them, I thought, you know, when she sent me her application. I really liked her, you know, from her application. So I called her up, and I said, okay, I have one question and one question only. She said, what's that? I said, are you willing to forget everything you've learned and all that stuff you paid all that money for? Can I show you how to do this easily? And not only is she doing it, she laughed and she said she would definitely work on that. And so she has, and she's actually seeing things now. And a lot of my students are starting to see that never saw before. And that's huge. I mean, that's really huge, because as we all know, that's not always the easiest thing when we think it's not easy, but it is really. And so they're doing great. I'm really, really proud of every one of them.
So this is something that anybody can learn how to do.
Yes. Yes.
Well,
I've always
great.
Known that, but I've actually proved it this year. I mean, every single one of my students can do this. And I've got them working on, I'm taking volunteers in Atlanta and Spokane, and they're coming in and getting worked on. And so my students are working with total strangers and doing a brilliant job. And we still have 3 classes to go, so we're just a little over halfway now.
That's just wonderful.
Yeah.
It's a new approach to healing, energy medicine. I'm trying to.
I call it a vast contribution to the changing future of medicine.
That's
yeah.
what I was looking for. I knew you had
yeah.
it said this perfectly.
I have physicians taking the classes. I have a chiropractor in there. I have physical therapists in there. I have everyday people who have no healing history whatsoever. It's a great mix of people, and everybody gets along just so well and helps each other, and it's a lot of fun.
And is this something that you could do, if you learn how to do this, could you do it on yourself?
Sure.
So it can be self-help or helping others in healing?
Yes. And when you're done, and after I've certified you, not only will you be able to do it, but you'll be able to charge to do it and use all of my logos and my literature and keep up with whatever's coming up, changes in the energies and all of that. I'll be keeping all my students up to date with whatever's coming in new, so they'll always be cutting edge. And the way I've structured the program is everybody supports each other. And like the people that are going on to be teachers will be having to learn how to mentor the students, and the students that are in part two will help mentor the part, you know, the new people. And so it's a really good solid foundation of networking that everybody's going to get, and I help you build your practice while you're learning with me, because you have to do so many practice sessions. And so by the time you get done, people already know what you can do, and they're going to be ready to come back and be your first clients. So I think I've thought it out to be as highly and mutually supportive as possible.
Absolutely. Well,
yeah.
I'm just thinking out loud here, because, I mean, you said that anybody can do this.
Uh-huh.
If someone had in their astrological chart the mark of the healer anywhere, then it seems to me that they would just really gravitate towards what you're doing.
Could be.
So I would like to just put it out there. If you know your chart, or you know your natal chart, if you have anything at 12 degrees, then this might be a method that you can, a modality, that's what I was looking for, that you can use and really access your rites of passage.
I didn't know that. 12 degrees, huh?
Uh-huh.
Oh. Yeah, astrology is not my best area.
Well, I mean, you do so many incredible things, you know, you got to draw the line somewhere, right?
Yeah, I know.
But
you guys are great at it.
Yeah, from like 11 degrees and more than 30 minutes up through, you know, up through 12 degrees, 59 minutes, that all counts as activation on the mark of the healer. So if you have that in your chart and you really are
does it matter where it is?
Magnetized to Dr. Meg's classes, then, you know, maybe you could put it together, speaking to the listeners. So just putting that out there. Anastasia, if you have any comments or questions, you can jump in here. I know we're kind of monopolizing the the conversation, but I do want to let you know that you're also on the air. And we do have a question coming in, and I'm going to pick up on that right now, if you wouldn't mind taking a question.
Sure.
Okay. As soon as I get the mic to open up, there we go. Okay, this is Tammy. Tammy, you're on the air with Dr. Meg.
Hi, Dr. Meg. Hello. I was wondering if the Bosnian pyramids, if they've been linked to, like, Atlantean energies or Lemurian?
I would say, not literally, but there's been a lot of insight about an Atlantean connection.
Yeah,
and
when you
certainly
talk about your healing in there, it just lit me up about the Atlantean healing chambers.
Yeah. You know, when the masters first started teaching me, they would take me out of this reality into some of those chambers, and the energy there at the Bosnian sites was very similar.
Great. Did you pick up any harmonics or tones while you were in there?
Not specific tones. They're more like multiples. And the harmonics there are different than anywhere any of us have ever been. It's so perfectly balanced, even though there's a few things out of place from weather and earthquakes and stuff like that. The site is so perfectly balanced, you can feel it in your whole self. Now, I don't just mean your whole body, I mean your whole everything. It affects you so positively, and we are harmonics as well. And for a place with a, to affect you that brilliantly, the harmonics have to be so well balanced and so finely tuned. That would be the case there. I was just in awe, really. I wish we had greater vocabularies to describe the kind of things that we can feel and know in a place like that, you know, or anything metaphysically.
Yeah.
Do you think that it was more pure and balanced because it's so untouched, like
yes.
the pyramids in Egypt, that it above and below is holding more of a balance because of that fact?
Yes, I do that. I do completely. And you know what's really funny, Tammy, is a lot of people have been saying, oh, those aren't real pyramids because they're covered in concrete. Well, first of all, this mix has been tested as the hardest concrete in the entire world and ever. And
wow.
It's made, you know, from local stuff, but it's the hardest concrete in the world. And the whole pyramid is coated with this stuff. Well, what they've forgotten is the pyramids, both in Teotihuacan and in Giza in Egypt, were covered in different substances before they were excavated. And then when they were excavated, that stuff was torn off.
Wow.
In Teotihuacan, they were covered in a white masonry and then painted with brilliant colors of red and blue and yellow. And you know, the ones in Giza were covered in limestone, so why wouldn't these be covered in a concrete in a similar fashion? They use what's available, you know, and that's where I think, you know, people sometimes are just ignorant when they make those kind of statements because they haven't looked at anything. They're just reacting.
And could you touch and explain one more time? I'm just fascinated by the crystal that is thought to be inside of the ceramic?
Oh, it's not thought to be. It is there.
How big is the crystal?
They've done some sort of penetrating kind of radar or something, and it's actually, okay, if you go on my Facebook page, I'm Doc Spirit on Facebook, go on there and you'll see me sitting next to this humongous rock-looking thing. That is what I'm talking about. And inside of that, just above the middle, there's an egg-shaped anomaly. And that egg-shaped anomaly is sitting directly over the fork in the underground water. And they believe that it is quartz. All the tunnel walls are lined in quartz, too.
Also, there's a great deal of quartz in that area?
Yeah. Yeah, but you could see where there's layers and layers of it in some places, almost like it was intentionally put there.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, the other thing about those big ceramic pieces, and there are quite a few of them, this one that I'm talking about is the biggest one, that every single one of them is lying on a change in underground water direction or is showing which way the direction of the water goes. So they're all putting off ultrasound. So somehow they're helping to keep the balance of the energy fields inside the tunnels, as well as probably the whole site, you know, because it's all connected.
All right, sign me up for September.
Yeah, I'll be posting it on my site. Sam had to go out of the country, and I was supposed to meet with this head of tourism, a Bosnia guy, and the night before he was supposed to come get me, his office was broken into, and all of his equipment was stolen, and he didn't have anything to show me. I'm just waiting for them to regroup and then so that I can get everything arranged, and Sam should be getting back soon, so I should be able to connect me pretty soon.
Well, thanks for bringing this information out tonight. I'm just so excited.
I am too. Thanks for all your great questions.
Okay. Well, Tammy, thank you so much for calling. And we are going to move on. So, Tammy, I'll say goodbye right now. I'll talk to you later.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye, Tammy.
If you have a question or a comment for Dr. Meg, you need to press 1 on your keypad.
so we know you want to come on the air. And,
I won't bite anybody.
Well, you've covered everything so well and so completely. I just want to thank you so much. Now, you're going to Peru in December. For the equinox, you'll be there. And,
yeah.
You know, Lavendar, I wanted to ask you something. So I was thinking when I was listening to Dr. Meg, because you said that some of the stuff in there has been carbon dated to 32,500 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Lavendar, is that older than Atlantis?
Well, you know, Atlantis, there were three different times of Atlantis and three different destructions of Atlantis.
Right.
So there could be, you know, there was an Atlantis that was up and flourishing about 30 or 35,000 years ago. And the
That's
one before
right.
that was about 50,000 years ago. Then the last one was 10,500 years ago. So it would maybe be the middle one. And as my understanding is they did have outposts of their civilization in different areas of the world.
Yeah, that's what my guys say, too, that it wasn't just the site they're looking, that everybody's trying to find. They had outposts everywhere, and that's why many of them survived the cataclysmic event that sunk Atlantis, and that's why the technologies got so widely dispersed. And, you know, they went to Egypt, they went to Polynesia, they went to South America, they went to, you know, all over the place, so...
Well,
yeah,
there's even pyramids underwater in Japan, and I understand there's some south of Louisiana.
Yeah, and I've been saying for years that there's pyramids in Antarctica, and there's a big rumor going around online that some Russian scientists have found pyramids down there where the ice is melting.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow, an archaeologist's dream. Woo!
Suit me up, but keep me warm. I want to go see him.
Yeah.
there's your air conditioning for you.
You got it. Then I'd be complaining about how cold it was. Yeah, the Antarctic's really cold. Seriously.
Yeah, you know, that reminds me. I saw a show on, I think it was National Geographic. They were doing some series, and I happened to catch the one, and I think it was either the North Pole or the South Pole, but they were doing a thing with penguins, and they were showing something that people just don't get to see. And I think about it often because there's such wisdom in it, because it is so, I mean, beyond cold climate.
Yeah,
there.
I don't know how they do it, really.
But this is what they showed. A whole bunch, I mean like hundreds of penguins, and they bunch all up, and one penguin gets to go to the center, and all the other ones bunch around him and keep him warm for a period of time. And when his time is up, he's all warmed up, he comes out, and the next one goes into the center, and they keep taking turns at protecting each other and keeping each other warm. And by the time the ones on the outer rim would be like starting to get really, really cold, then they move inside. And it's just almost like a kind of a like a big donut energy thing, like you talk about the toroids or
the torus. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and the penguins, they cooperate as a group in a community for their own survival. And you know, the guy that's on the inside is not saying no, I'm not giving up my warm spot. He relinquishes it. And the guys on the outside, they just keep moving in, and the guys on the inside, and it's just a constant protection of the group, of the community.
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice if we took care of each other like that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, nature is so perfect. But that just made a huge impression on me when you mentioned Antarctica. I always think of, and I don't even know if the penguins are North Pole or South Pole, but either place is very cold, and that's how they cope with it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. They've had a larger ice melt there than in previous years also. I think it was in the Arctic. I was just reading.
Well, we just had a caller with a question. Oh, and he's back. He just fell off the switchboard there for a second. So this is going to be, we're going to talk to Ralph here in a second. Hello, Ralph. You're on the air with Dr. Meg. Welcome.
Hi. How you doing?
Hi, Ralph.
Okay, the signal's kind of bad. Hope I can get through this. I appreciate every time Dr. Meg is on, but the whole modality around strengthening chakras and aligning chakras really intrigues me. I was wondering if there's a usefulness in using crystals to help in strengthening each one of our chakras and aligning all of them. And do you use that in your in any of your use of aligning chakras?
No, Ralph, I don't use tools like that. I use my body and my inner senses and energy. But to answer your question, yes, crystals can be very useful. And here's the way I see it. If you are using the right crystals at the right time in the right places, they can be extremely helpful. They can also expand energy or focus energy. But when it comes to doing that within a human energy field, you know, a person really has to kind of have a grasp of what's going on, because when you start directing energy that succinctly or magnifying it with, you know, depending on what kind of crystals you're using, you're really causing a lot of, you know, like when you throw a rock in the water, you see ripples. Well, when you start directing energy through a crystal into an energy field, just imagine that times a thousand. I think that, you know, and then crystals all have their own harmonics depending on where they come from, what kind of elements they're made of, how they were made, you know, the kind of pressure. There's so many factors in there that have everything to do with what you could best use those for. So it just comes with a little discernment, you know, when you're using those kind of tools. But they are great tools when you use them right.
Yeah, I thought maybe they may be. Lavender, do you have a sense of being able to use maybe the double terminated crystals, maybe the geyser crystal, to help fortify or even magnify some of the chakra centers?
Now, those geyser crystals, they have a life and energy of their own. It's not, how do you say this? You can't take them and direct energy through them. They're directed already. I mean,
right,
it's like
those are different.
All you need to do is have those in your presence, and you need to get really calm and set and just balance yourself and let the crystals be part of the environment. You can't force energy into the Giza crystals. They're not built that way. It takes a lot of restraint to be around crystal energy, because crystal energy is something that, of course, you know, Atlantis, the downfall of Atlantis happened because of misuse of power of crystal. And once you are attuned to your own personal crystal, and it's attuned to you, and you stay balanced with it, then it becomes part of you. And it takes time to get yourself centered and balanced to where you want to hold a crystal and let it be part of your, almost a part of your anatomy. But as far as, now if you were going to direct healing to a particular part of your body, is that what you were referring to?
Well, no, but that's another interesting thought, is how to use those. But similar to that, I was thinking about just strengthening maybe your heart energy center as well as maybe your throat and so forth.
Okay.
Yeah, but the healing is
but see, crystals magnify.
Right.
Crystals make things. They're a magnification. So, you know, if people have a belief system that comes from strong Christianity and comes from a different place, if they don't take energy into account, they can get in trouble with crystals.
Mm.
It's a way of aligning yourself to your thoughts and your feelings and your whole energy pattern. And if you're ever out of sorts, don't pick up a crystal, ever.
Mm.
Don't pick one up hoping it's going to make you feel better. See what I'm saying?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
You can actually make things worse if you don't.
Crystals are just they're a form of magnification, and they can actually do more harm at times if you don't know what you're doing.
Hmm.
I know one time I took all the crystals out to get them charged in the sun at noon, and I had probably 200 crystals out there in Cripple Creek all lined up, and I went out and laid out in the middle of them thinking that this is what I needed to do. I almost burned myself up.
Yeah.
It made me very sick.
I bet.
It's like,
you know, one of the worst times I ever felt in my life was the first time I bought a crystal. I bought a hematite, and I had it in my pocket for quite a while, weeks or months, and I was feeling more and more depressed all the time. And finally I thought, gee, I wonder if it's this crystal I'm carrying around, and I put it down, and I started feeling better almost immediately. You know, I'm really high frequency. This was years and years ago. I've always tended to be really high frequency, and a hematite is very grounding. And I didn't know that. I just thought it was very pretty, and I bought it and put it in my pocket, which is what a lot of us do. Oh, isn't that pretty? Let me take it home. But, yeah, they can affect you. So be careful what you're carrying around or wearing or putting on. You know, they are beautiful, but they do have they're very powerful in their own right.
I have something I wanted to add to that, and that is that, you know, everybody's different. Everybody has a different frequency, and some people are actually quite gifted in using crystals. I know people that do use a lot of crystals in their healing. And because it is a matter of consciousness, all healing.
Sorry. Hang on a second, Anastasia. Your microphone went off there for a second.
Oh, it did?
Yeah,
can
that's
you
okay.
Now?
So you said that crystals are part of all healing. You were saying something about all healing.
I'm talking about consciousness.
Oh, consciousness
is the root of all healing. The implement itself is just simply a tool for our consciousness to focus or to direct. We could go on and on, from the Native American rattle to crystals to whatever. I mean, there's just on and on. There are many things. You know, people buy a rabbit's foot so that they'll feel lucky and fortunate. Well, it's not the rabbit's foot that works. It's the person's belief in the rabbit's foot.
Okay.
And as consciousness is the foundation of our existence and the manifestation of what occurs, all healing originates in consciousness. But I wanted to say that for our caller, to work on your heart chakra, I want to share a Hopi technique with you and with all of our listeners that's just lovely and it works. So when you're feeling particularly achy in your heart, depressed, sad, you feel like your heart chakra needs some work, the way to deal with that is to focus on the energy of love. And we have to start with self-love. And a Hopi grandmother has taught us that a method that they use is to stand up straight, put your feet slightly apart, that's the healer stance, remove the lock from your knees, just lightly, you know, make your knees flexible, stand relaxed, it's called the bear stance in the Native American tradition, lighten your shoulders, let your shoulders droop just a little bit, get real comfortable, make sure your feet are completely grounded to the earth. And with your right hand, raise your arm. And you know that old Girl Scout symbol with the three fingers up and the thumb and the thumb and the little finger pressed down in your palm with the three fingers sticking outward? Take your three fingers and tap the top of your head four times with these words. Love, 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 love. And do that four times, focusing on patting the top, the crown of your head, with the energy of love, and you're giving love to yourself. You'll be amazed at how that will amplify and heal and balance your very own heart chakra, because the heart is about love. So I just want to add that really consciousness is everything, and all healing starts with love.
That's so true. And healing is about a state of love, you know. That's what unconditionality is, you know. It's about healing and about, well, it's not even healing. It's about being in our perfection, you know. It's about knowing that we are perfect in spite of what we want to believe.
Well, Ralph, right,
I hope that answers your question.
I just wanted to say that we are dual. We are dual beings. This is what we signed up for this earth trip. Yeah, it's about overcoming, you know, the perceptions of duality, but nevertheless, we're very much immersed in the experience. And so embracing that aspect of the struggle and the trial and the illusion and the confusion is all part of the journey. And so if we can't leap to ascendancy right off the bat, which we can't, then these baby steps by wise elders and masters and teachers are given to us of how to help ourselves in small ways. And that's how we grow. We grow step by step. So anyway, that's something you might want to try with that Hopi method, and I hope that you find great comfort from that.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, Ralph, thank you so much for calling. Bye-bye, sweetie. Well, if we have any other comments or questions, you've just really covered everything so well, Dr. Meg. Is there anything else that you want to talk about?
I have a couple new books coming out and an app this fall.
Oh, cool.
If you love the Living Light cards, there is soon going to be an app for that. And I expect it'll be about a month before it comes out. I have a working model, but it's not finished yet. It is drop dead gorgeous. If you think those cards are pretty in the deck, what do you see the graphics on? It's for iPhones and iPads at first. Believe it or not, you have to have a separate one made for the other gadgets, and it's really expensive. So I started with that. That'll be out, I imagine, early October. And then October 1st, my book, The Art of Living Out Loud, is coming out, How to Leave Behind Your Baggage and Pain to Become a Happy, Whole, Perfect Human Being with Unlimited Potential. And what you were just saying about step by step, this is kind of one of those things that takes you through, you know, how to be honest with yourself, how to drop your patterns, how to recognize them first, and how to have healthy relationships. It's a great kind of a hands-on little toolbox that you can take where, you know, read. And at the end of every chapter, there are exercises that kind of drive home what I'm teaching in each chapter. So it's a lot of fun. It's a real sassy book. I didn't take anything too seriously, but it's all very serious. Then December 1st, Touching the Light, 365 Illuminations to Live By is coming out. And that is, if you've been a Facebook friend of mine for any length of time, normally I send out thoughts for the day, these little things that pop into my head every morning. And we took a year's worth of them and made a book out of them, so you can use them for guidance. You can use it for guidance every day. So I've been busy.
I guess.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good thing you got all that energy from Bosnia, because you got a lot of things you're doing.
Oh, I know. But, you know, That's the thing, though. When you stay now and you don't worry about stuff, see, I don't worry at all. And I mean it. When you don't worry and you're not distracting yourself with what could be, might be, what if, you know, none of that's real. So if you just stay now, that's where everything's happening. Nothing ever happens outside of a now. You've heard me say that. And that's how I get so much done, because I don't distract myself all the time with all the what ifs and how comes and wherefores and all of that, you know. And people say, well, how do you do it? And I say, I don't look up. You know, it's kind of like when you're climbing a mountain. The more you look up at the top, the harder it gets. But if you just put one foot in front of the other, it's not so bad.
Right. Well, again, there's a matter of perception.
Yep.
You know, if you are looking outside of the now, the perception is completely an illusion.
It's just
imagining.
It's a what if. What if. It's not even reality. It's, you know, and we human beings drive ourselves nuts about that stuff.
It's a really hard thing to teach people, and you do a good job by living it, because that's the example, and it's so hard to get everyone to understand that, because we've been trained that we live in a clockwork universe and that there is a future and there is a past, and the biggest leap that we have to get people into healing modalities and spirit connectedness is just to simply get plugged into the now, which is why I'm always telling my clients, have a daily spiritual practice no matter what, you know, because as Yoda said, there is no try, there's only do, and be present with yourself, and nature is a good way to do that, getting out in nature, connecting with the planet, because that's one reason society's going so crazy. We're all wired to our iPhones and our pads and whatever, and our computers, and living, we talk about imaginary worlds. Well, now there's an imaginary world. So really, if we want to understand truth and reality, the answer is in this moment. And that's really
that's
all
right.
there is. And that's where
right.
we find the ability to heal and to transcend anything and everything we need to. That's where it all happens, is in this divine moment. So you're doing a good job by living that, and that's how you're able to accomplish so much. And let us all take that as an example, because if we do that, we can accomplish much easier and with great facility our purpose, why we came here. So let's all make that
a
commitment coming up. Let's try it for 7 days. Let's all try to be very present in the now and see how that works for us. I think everyone's going to be very happy with the results of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, you know, that I just thought of a question now. As you were mentioning, you know, every place you go, how many people do you see who are looking at a device, you know, whether it's, you know, kids with games, people with iPhones, iPads, everything, you know, and they're in a public situation and they're completely oblivious to everything around them and they're totally focused on this thing. Dr. Meg, with all of your experience with the children of now and the starseed children, the crystal children, the indigo children, and all those labels that people have come up for the new breed of children, how do you think this is going to impact them when they're so conditioned by their peers to just be hooked on these little, handheld devices?
Yeah, you know, it's a double-edged sword. First of all of this is nothing more than a reflection of consciousness, that we have found a way to put consciousness in front of us. You know, the internet is like creation, you know, like the infinite that has all of this information in it. And we as human beings tend to make things that reflect what's inside of us or what we're capable of, but we don't quite understand that, so we make it so we could see it and feel it and touch it and that kind of thing. So in that respect, what I see is that is one more leap in consciousness. I see it kind of opposite the way a lot of people do. On the other hand, the way that you're describing and how people are using it, and I want to admit I own all of those things, but I don't use them that way. I use them as tools for what I do and to keep things going while I'm on the run, but I don't live and breathe them, you know. And what I see that this is going to, you know, is doing to people in general and the children is it's desensitizing people and getting them away from looking in each other's eyes and feeling the emotions of words and touch and that kind of thing. And I'm concerned that long term we're going to find ourselves with a population that's dispassionate. So, you know, as long as we can teach our kids the fact that, you know, eye to eye, heart to heart is really important, you know, I think we'd be okay. I just don't know if enough parents are taking enough time to do any of that. On the other hand, these kids are so darn brilliant and so intuitive and such a comprehensive nature as it is, you know, they probably in many ways wouldn't be nearly as affected as some of us who are older who didn't have that kind of head start with ourselves. So, you know, there are a lot of facets to that question.
It really is complicated. And when you really consider that our spiritual bodies are very much like the internet, you know, we're all hardwired into the all that is, it's a very powerful metaphor for the expansion of consciousness. But like anything else, as we're coming up against these big changes, we're seeing a lot of wrinkles in the process and problems associated with it, which go deep into metaphysical questions and even ethics as we look ahead. But for those that are unaware, it can really be like Dr. Meg just said, something that numbs us to interconnectivity, and that's a real concern.
Uh-huh. That's true. You know, a lot of kids don't understand what being alive or being dead really means because it's all in a video game. And, you know, we're unfortunately seeing some events that I think are directly reflecting that effect on our kids. So there are so many different facets, like I said, to this whole picture. And only time is going to really tell what the effect's been. I don't think that we're going to have any less of these things. And, in fact, I think that technologies are going to get so much more refined that what we have now are baby toys compared to what we'll have in the future. You know, the question, it comes down to the responsibility of what we've created and what we do with it. And frankly, our technology has outgrown our psychology.
Absolutely.
And that's what happened in Atlanta. So, you know, hopefully enough of us can be aware enough of that we can work on changing that paradigm.
Right, exactly.
Well, we have, I know just through our work with looking at you know, for star markings and charts, it's amazing how many people who have the marks for Atlantis are back. And that's what we tell them, one of the missions, one of the reasons that these Atlantean souls are alive again today is because they are trying to make sure that Atlantis never happens again. And it's about balancing science and spirit, making sure that the spiritual metaphysical understanding stays in balance with the technology. Because we're pretty well out of balance right now, so it's a big job.
Yeah, it is.
Especially since we have fewer starseed than we do working on the issues than we do the population at large. So when we all recognize the responsibilities that we have, we don't need to take ourselves too seriously, but really it is, I mean, there's a lot at stake for each one of us to do our part. And I think that could, you know, we need to stress that with ourselves every morning when we get up. What can I do to make the world a better place today? And that, you know, that should be a focus for all of us, because it really is getting to a tipping point. And that's what we're here to do. This is the time. This is why we were born. It's very exciting, but it's also a big responsibility.
Yeah,
it sure is. Well, we just have a few minutes left to go here. And if you have a question or comment, we're going to talk to, let's see, I'm looking on the switchboard here. Okay, we just have a few minutes left here, but I do want to say hi to Doc Belva. Hello, Belva.
Hi, darling. How are you?
We're doing just fine. How are you doing?
Much better, thank you. I really enjoyed this, and it came to me, Ariel, you and Lavendar, what you're doing to bring teachers to us and to raise the awareness of the planet, of the people that are fortunate enough to be able to find your show. Look what the work you're doing. It's amazing, the teachers you bring and introduce us to and teach us how to face life. It's just wonderful. I'm very proud of you.
Well, thank you, sweetie. And I know that You've done a lot of good work in your life as well, and it's all about sharing and helping each other, like you said, and we're just one big happy family here.
I know, it's right? Wonderful.
Yeah.
I was so pleased because I've spent my life considering the things that happened to me rather than being a victim as being a lesson. And I welcome, good or bad, however you feel about the things I experience are wonderful lessons that make me stronger and make me understand how things work in the universe. So it's been just terrific listening to the show tonight, and I just wanted to tell you that.
Well, thank you, sweetie. You know how much we love you. And thanks so much for...
The little girl was in the hospital that was had her 15th birthday in the hospital. They removed her colon and put a bag. She's only 15. Made me just crazy. But she's out of the hospital now, so she's away from all the drugs and the things that were harming her inside. So I'm doing a lot of work with her right now and a lot of prayer to make her... She looks like Elizabeth Taylor did when she worked with a horse in her movie that she was so famous. She's a beautiful girl. And to have her go through all that, it's been 4 months that she's been in 3 different hospitals.
Aww.
So now she's out, and I'm glad.
Well, that's great. Well, you keep doing what you do. And we thank you so much for calling in, Belle. It's always a pleasure to
hear you.
And happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for calling in, Belle.
Okay, darling.
So,
thank you for being there.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, we just have a couple of minutes, Dr. Meg, so I want to take that time to thank you so much for spending this evening with us. And once again, the website is spiritlight.com and touchingthelight.org. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay.
Right. Thank you.
And you know,
I just love it that I get to come back here fairly regularly. It's one of the only places that I can just really say it like it is, and it's just fine. I don't have to edit anything when I talk with y'all, and I just love that.
Well, we love when you do it too. And and your Facebook page is Doc Spirit.
DOC Spirit. All one
okay.
word. Or you can search my name. I've got my wall open to the public, so even if I have my friend things full, but you can still get on there. And I also have another page. You can just put Meg Blackburn Losey in there, and they should both come up. And I usually post stuff on both pages, like if I put an announcement or something. But the
mm-hmm.
pictures are just on the one.
Okay. So
yeah.
Everyone has all that contact information, and of course, if you're listening in the archives, it's also in the show announcement. So, well, again, thank you so much, Dr. Megan, and we want to have you back on real soon. We just love when you come by.
Thank you.
I know you have a lot of fans for your
yeah,
book,
well, you
for
guys
your radio
do
show.
Too. I tell you.
Well,
when we cross-pollinate like this, it's really fun. Lavendar was on my show a couple weeks ago, and I realize sometimes just how many people we have in common and how cool it is that we're bringing these two big groups together, too.
Oh, it's wonderful, you know, and that's really what this is all about. It's
yeah.
You know, community and unity and sharing and network and sharing power. You know, I mean, this is what the divine feminine, the goddess energy, and the new, you know, age of reason. It's all part of that.
Yeah.
So
well, true power
is
gentle power. It's the power of the heart. It doesn't need to be aggressive.
Well said. And with that, we are going to say good night. And thank you to everyone for listening. We'll be back next week at 7 Eastern Time. And you've been listening to Dr. Meg Blackburn-Losey on Starseed Radio Academy on behalf of Lavendar and Anastasia and Chris and all of our Starseed team, Tammy, Rose, Sahar, and Belva. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.